To another episode of the Roto-World Football Podcast. My name is Josh Norris. Thank you so much for being here, joining us for another episode. I'm here today with Patrick Doherty and Rich Rebar. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing great, Josh. You know, this gives me a little bit of nostalgic feeling, our Sunday morning sessions that we used to have in season. So it feels good to see your face here on May 2nd.
Rich, I am so happy that we don't have to do that for a few months. You know, it's like way in the distance. I don't even know what I'm doing next week. So I hate you for bringing that up at this point in the calendar, by the way. Pat, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. It's actually not way in the distance, and that's giving me a feeling of terror how close the season is. So, yeah, you guys are getting like warm, fuzzy, nostalgic feelings. I'm just getting sheer terror.
You have draft guide stuff you have to start writing by the end of this month, correct? I mean, the Roto-World draft guide will be
by the end of this month. We need to start probably this week, unfortunately. Okay. Gonna be a great month. Reeves, it is. I should not complain.
Reeves, before we get into some football stuff, I kind of just want to continue this conversation we were having before we went live, and I want to pose it to you because obviously we nerd out when we don't talk about football. I want to pose it to you this way. If you could encapsulate like your gaming history into one video game, what would it be? Like, which one best defines you, in your opinion?
I don't know if there's one that best defines me, but I mean, I was more someone that wanted to be more involved in like the RPG element, hands-on control, everything about the game that I can. So, I mean, that's why I was always drawn to RPGs as a kid. And even that aspect that tied into sporting games. I mean, sporting games were RPGs too. Yeah. People acted like they weren't, but they totally were RPG games.
Especially when you played like the Blitz game where you had to inject yourself with PEDs or make that decision. Did you ever play that
one? Especially now because the Madden Ultimate Team is really popular now, right? And you get all these different cards that are players that where you can alter their attributes and everything, and people, that's their most popular version of Madden right now that people play online, and it literally is just an online RPG.
Pat, if I say Day of the Tentacle or Full Throttle or Sam and Max, do those names mean anything to you?
Nope. Are they FIFA 19 players? Then maybe they would. But are you talking about Blitz? All I'll say about Blitz, the most infamous game in video game history when it came to the computer cheating. Uh-huh. And, you know, you're up by 6 touchdowns and all of a sudden you throw 5 interceptions in a row.
I believe it's called the rubber band theory. Is it not? Like that? You can't get too far out in front or else the computer will catch up to you, something
yes,
like that.
Yes, they will.
Blitz was cool because whatever direction you rolled out, that's what handed your quarterback was.
I did not.
Wow, I did not realize that.
Yeah, if you were Peyton Manning and you rolled out left, he just threw left-handed.
Bill Belichick's been working on developing a prospect like that for 35 years, so hopefully.
There's been some baseball pitchers that throw with both hands.
Yeah, Ryan Dull on the Oakland A's in the past few years, actually.
Let's talk about real sports now, fellas. Okay, we obviously had the NFL draft that concluded this past weekend. Every single player was blurbed on Roto-World. We have plenty of columns and notes and grades, and including Rich Rebar's Fantasy Fallout column, which really talks about the impact of rookies on their current team. So rather than just let Rich write that and it, you know, disintegrate into the universe, why not make a full podcast around that? So we're going to do that today. Fantasy Fallout, kind of the shockwaves, how those impact the rosters, position battles that we're going to be hearing about this summer. And we start off with Josh Jacobs of the Oakland Raiders, who is the first pick or the first running back in the first round, 24th overall. What he's going to do with the Oakland Raiders, guys, let me paint the picture for you. This is a team that had Marshawn Lynch last year, had Doug Martin last year, basically just have Jalen Richard and Chris Warren on the roster after Isaiah Crowell tore his Achilles just in offseason work. And so he's replacing, right now, 262 carries on the Raiders and 33 receptions. That's a combination of Doug Martin and Marshawn Lynch. Pat, that makes him a pretty promising player as we head into his rookie season.
This is Joshua Jacobs, man. I'll tell you what. That was a John Gruden impression.
Finn.
Terrible impression. Everyone remembers last year John Gruden being weirdly obsessed with Doug Martin. And Josh Jacobs already, he like kind of reminded me of Doug Martin when I watched him play. Kind of when Doug Martin was good, I should say. So not Doug Martin we've seen in the past 3 years, but kind of a low center of gravity type, kind of a forward momentum type. Like, I can see why John Gruden likes him, but, you know, he's another guy coming out of Alabama, was a committee back almost his entire college career. We've seen in the NFL these days that doesn't necessarily now mean you'll be a committee back in the NFL. Like, that stigma, even if, like, you were just a committee back in college, say, like, Alvin Kamara, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be forever doomed to, like, one-third of the touches or whatever. So, and clearly they drafted Joshua Jacobs with a three-down role in mind. So they're going to give him a shot. It's just, you know, can he transition to bigger workloads? Can he? But he's used to big – I was about to get into a bunch of cliches, but even though it's John Gruden using a first-round pick on a running back, I wouldn't have done it, but I don't dislike the player, and certainly excited for fantasy and certainly in the running for number one overall pick in rookie dynasty drafts.
Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. And Reeves, like, again, we care about foundation, you know, one-back backfields for what we're trying to do and accomplish in acquiring running backs. And it's very irregular that you have someone that wasn't a top 10 selection in the NFL draft that could potentially be one that rookie year. And Josh Jacobs, even with, you know, a limited workload in college, I think he had like 400 fewer carries than Devin Singletary did. And, you know, only like 19 catches during his college career or his final season. There's a lot of upside and optimism here for his rookie season.
He really is one of the more unique objective pairings to draft capital that we've had, and maybe in the history since we've been doing all this in this field, he's the first running back to go in the first round without 1,000 yards from scrimmage college season since John Avery in 1998. This guy is a guy that you know was basically outplayed or given more opportunities than Damian Harris, who went in the third round of this draft, another guy in this draft. But then you look at some of his efficiency and it's off the charts. You know, 41% of his rushing attempts went for a first down or touchdown, the highest in the nation. He averaged over 10 yards per target in the receiving game for a running back, which is pretty outrageous. And then you look at his athletic profile, and he basically just went out and bricked his pro day. Like, he was a disaster athletically at his pro day. And then they get drafted in the first round. So it's just a really unique, you know, test case that we're going to have. Because even Kamara, who had no production and, like, a good athletic profile, went in the third round was traded up for. But, you know, he's going to a spot. The Raiders are missing 69.7% of their rushing attempts in the 28th season. You can check that out at RotoWorld on John Daigle's Unaccounted For Touches, you know, article. So definitely hit that up if you want to see where teams, you know, and what they're missing from production that they gave out last year. So the Raiders are first in the league with opportunity, and that's all we really care about, the running backs, no matter what we care about them objectively. Are you getting the ball? Are you getting the ball in the passing game, and are you getting the touchdown opportunities? And he's set up to do that, so we just have to hold our nose and get in bed.
And Pat mentioned how much John Gruden loved Doug Martin, even a declining
this
Doug Martin.
Play, man.
Yeah, okay, there we go. Every time, Pat, we're just going to copy and paste that and input that whenever we talk about the Raiders. And then we read in Peter King's piece that Mike Mayock and John Gruden wanted to leave this draft at number 24 overall with Josh Jacobs, and they were super nervous that it wasn't going to happen. I mean, it was the most predictable pick, one of them, in the first round.
Okay. Can I say, I made this point to you before, Josh. How Raiders is it that they promised a, like, shocking surprise at number four and delivered, took someone that should not have been going at number four overall, and then yet somehow in the same round had a pick that everyone knew for months they were going to make. So somehow they kept the wraps on, like, this legitimately shocking one, and another pick where they just telegraphed for months and months and months and then made it. Yeah. Basically, I don't know what to make of the Oakland Raiders.
Let's move on to another player. This is Marlon Mack with the Indianapolis Colts. Rich, I mean, we kind of thought this whole offseason that, you know, because there wasn't a clear lead back in the Colts roster, that they might add another player. They did not in free agency. They did not in the draft. So now you have Marlon Mack last year in 2018, had 195 carries and 17 receptions, and he even missed quite a bit of time. So, Reeves, it certainly seems like Marlon Mack's place is safe in that Colts roster.
Yeah, in the offseason, you know, Frank Reich, you know, gave him a vote of confidence, and so did Chris Ballard, and they doubled down on that vote of confidence by not taking a running back at all with any of their 10 selections. Granted, they did take two last year.
Correct.
You know, and they brought in Spencer Ware, who's just like a vet fill-in-the-cracks type of running back, you know, for the, you know, given the ages of all these players. But Mack just turned 23 years old at the beginning of March. So when he returned in week 6 from that hamstring injury that he had, he was fourth in the NFL in rushing yardage. He was third in the NFL NFL in rushing touchdowns with 9. He was the PPR RB9. In the standard leagues, he was the RB7 over that span. And then if you look at how he just moved downhill throughout the season, they gave him more and more work. You know, the final 6 games of the year, he handled 78% of the Colts' backfield touches. They really leaned on him. The Colts went 5-1 down that stretch. You know, he went nuts in that first playoff game that they had against the Texans. The only downside for Mac is he only had more than 2 catches in 1 game during that breakout. So he's kind of more of like that RB2 floor bucket, because he's not getting those games where he's saving, you know, the poor rushing out. Games where he doesn't get a rushing touchdown. You know, you're not getting 30 receiving yards and 3 or 4 catches. When you get the 70 yards rushing and the no touchdown game, he's a bigger hit because he's not getting those catches. But the Colts have all 5 of their offensive linemen returning this year. That was an offensive line that allowed the fewest sacks in the NFL, and they were 4th in adjusted line yards created for their running backs. So yeah, Max set up to be like a locked in like RB2 entering the season, but it's gonna be hard for him to get to RB1 status because of the catches.
Pat, let's move on to Miles Sanders with the Philadelphia Eagles.
I gotta get in one quick point about Marlon Mack. He reminds me kind of like Latavius Murray or Marshawn Lynch with the Raiders in terms of situation where it's a committee, sort of, but he's really locked in, and the guys behind him are kind of like Jalen Richard, DeAndre Washington type situations where they're going to be involved, but not to a degree where it's going to like really dent his floor. I think he has a very safe RB2 floor, and definitely a huge winner on draft weekend.
And Paris Campbell also affects Nyheim Hines more than people are leading on.
For sure. 100%, because, I mean, we know Paris Campbell had an 8 out of 4.5 yards at Ohio State, and that's kind of the area where Nyheim Hines was making his money last year. Pat, the Eagles in the second round selected Miles Sanders, 53 overall. That's actually a pick they got in the Lamar Jackson trade a year ago. Jordan Howard, we know that they traded for him this offseason just for a 2020 6th-round pick. I believe that can move up to a 5th round. And we know that Josh Adams saw somehow 120 carries. Wendell Smallwood saw 87 carries. Jay Ajayi saw 45 carries all last year. Pat, that's basically 250 carries that are on the table. And if you put it up like this, right, Jordan Howard, who many expected maybe to fill that, you know, not lead back role, but more carries than anyone else in the backfield, again, was acquired for just a 6th-round selection a year later. Meanwhile, Miles Sanders now was brought in for a 2nd-round pick. Is it as easy to say that Miles Sanders, despite never playing a down, is the most talented back in the Eagles and most likely going to lead them in touches out of the backfield?
Yeah, he's the most talented, and he's in the driver's seat. And, you know, the 6th-round pick, that cost spoke volumes for not viewing him for Jordan Howard as like he was a locked-in favorite. And, of course, the fact that Jordan Howard is not good. And this pick is going to challenge a lot of assumptions about the Eagles' backfield because, you know, the meme, you know, rightfully so, the past 2 or 3 years when Doug Peterson is comfortable with the sprawling committee, maybe even prefers a sprawling committee to having a locked-in lead guy or just a 2-man rotation. But speaking after the draft, I believe it was GM Howie Roseman, said Miles Sanders is the kind of back they've been looking for 2 to 3 years. Yep. So kind of saying that they weren't doing the committee by choice. They just hadn't found the guy they wanted to lead that committee. And this being a smart front office, a smart coaching staff, they weren't going to force the issue and try to like throw someone into that role that couldn't handle it. But it sounds like they believe they found it in Miles Sanders, and his road to lead dog duties is going to be kind of paved with gold. And another guy should be very, very high, top 2 or 3 maybe in dynasty rookie drafts. And I think he's going to get every opportunity to lead the backfield and, you know, challenge our assumptions that this is going to be like a terrible fantasy backfield and maybe just a much, much narrower backfield this year.
Rich, that's a lot of positivity in Miles Sanders. Anything quickly that you might be concerned about?
Just if he gets the money touches is really the only worry. But I think that
by that, you mean like touchdowns, you mean goal line situations, right?
What's that?
By that, you mean like touchdown situations, goal line situations.
Yeah, you know, is he going to be the guy getting those short yardage going? Is even an ineffective Jordan Howard could still come in at the 2-yard line and fall into the end zone if he's going to get those types of touches.
Darren Sproles and make him the goal line back, by the way.
Don't put a pass.
But Sanders is my favorite rookie running back landing spot because of where he'll end up going in drafts. He's going to be cheaper than Josh Jacobs, and he's going to have an opportunity for an exponentially larger role than a guy like David Montgomery if things work out. So he'll be my favorite running back out of those top 3 like landing spot guys.
Well, let's talk about David Montgomery, Reeves. He was selected in the 3rd round by Chicago, the 73rd overall selection. And it's not like the Bears just waited to draft him. They traded their third-round pick, a fifth-round pick in 2019, and a 2020 fourth-round selection.
Fourth-round pick next year.
Correct. That's how I ended that statement, Pat.
Sorry.
And yeah. Ryan Pace just is willing to trade future assets for players he really targets. And I haven't gotten to their press conference series yet, but it certainly seems like David Montgomery has, you know, lead back qualities that he wants. And Reeves, this comes after they signed Mike Davis to a 2-year, $6 million contract. And also after they have Tariq Cohen, who's obviously a role player, but an explosive player in that offense, that an offense that they, you know, value explosion in.
Yeah, I'm actually going to take the other side of this one and let you guys talk about David Montgomery. I'm going to take this opportunity to talk about how ludicrous Tariq Cohen's ADP is so far in fantasy drafts. Because, you know, Cohen's coming off of a season where he won, led the NFL in fumbles, but he had 8 touchdowns last year, I suppose the 3 of his rookie season. You know, he had 5 receiving TDs. Just 5 running backs since 1988 have had 5 or more receiving touchdowns in back-to-back season. He was also just the 5th running back sub 200 pounds to score 8 or more touchdowns on fewer than 200 touches in a season. None of those backs came back and scored more touchdowns the following season. Even if you want to remove size altogether from the equation and just talk about volume, just 6 backs all times have had 8 or more touchdowns in consecutive season and fewer than touches, period. James White also falls into that corollary for this upcoming season. So, I mean, the Bears were always going to draft or acquire a running back that was going to have more involvement in the passing game than Jordan Howard had, and that already had happened with Mike Davis. And now you're going to get David Montgomery, who had 70 catches in his collegiate career as well. So Cohen is already due for touchdown regression. He already may have wanted to have reduced touch, you know, regression because of all his fumbles and turnover problems that he had last year. And, you know, Mike Davis was already brought in. He had 34 catches in his part-time role for the Seahawks. So I look at Cohen and where he's going in drafts as a locked-in RB2, not even in PPR drafts. These are on sites that offer, like, play draft at 0.5 PPR. Yeah. And he's going around pick 22 for the running back position, and that's just buying all completely at ceiling price. Paying for that type of running back never has worked out in fantasy football when you pay the cost. You always want to get those guys on the cheapest point. You know, the Duke Johnsons of the world, you know, from last year. If it was an RB12 the year before, then you pay for it, and you don't score the touchdowns, don't get the touches, and you don't have the fantasy ceiling that you had.
We'll take a quick break right here from a word from our sponsor. It can be a little frustrating, especially if you're in a hurry or running late, to find yourself at a railway crossing waiting for a train. And if the signals are going and the train's not even there yet, you can feel a bit tempted to try and sneak across the tracks. Well, don't ever. Trains are often going a lot faster than you expect them to be, and they can't stop. Even if the engineer hits the brakes right away, it can take a train over a mile to stop. By that time, what used to be your car is just a crushed hunk of metal, and what used to be you, well, we better not think about that. The point is, you can't know how quickly the train will arrive. The train can't stop even if it sees you. The result is disaster. If the signals are on, the train is on its way, and you just need to remember one thing. Stop, because trains can't. This message has been brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Pat, we know that Tariq Cohen is going to have his role, but what do you make from the outside looking in of this Mike Davis, David Montgomery dynamic that's going to, you know, have the Bears choosing who's going to see more touches from the start of the season?
Yeah, I would read bad things into it for Mike Davis. I mean, the contract was interesting, but he is a journeyman. And, you know, literally 2 days before the draft, Ryan Pace said, you know, I think the Bears went to the draft with 5 draft picks. Ryan Pace said, running back is not a pressing need for us. Basically telling the whole world, not going to draft a running back. 2 days later, what's he do? He gives up that whole draft haul, like you said, including a 2020 fourth rounder, to move up 14 spots for a running back, a team with very limited draft capital. And so, I mean, they clearly really, really, really wanted David Montgomery. They're now publicly welcoming comparisons to Kareem Hunt. You know, he's being compared to Kareem Hunt before the draft, and now the Bears are publicly feeding into that, playing into that, saying they like that. I think it's safe to say they like David Montgomery, and that could have been a great spot for Mike Davis. Maybe it still could be. You know, even when teams fall in love with these rookie players, sometimes if they face plant in camp in the preseason, they don't force them in there. But David Montgomery, I think, is going to have a long leash, a lot of opportunity to establish the lead role. And I would be worried for Mike Davis and cautiously optimistic on David Montgomery.
Yeah, and Montgomery is a big back with balance and can win on contact, but there were other times that he just looked downright slow. Okay, so let's close out this running back group with 2 veterans, and I'll give 1 to each of you, okay? Reeves, do you want to hit on Damien Williams of Kansas City or Lamar Miller of Houston? You get to pick.
I'll take Lamar Miller since I've done Damien Williams on a few pods.
Go ahead, Reeves.
So, I mean, Lamar Miller is another one of these guys that we kind of expected Houston to kind of add running backs, and they just didn't. I mean, now they're going to enter the season with just Deontay Foreman, you know, a year removed from that Achilles, you know, injury, you know, coming back the full year. And he's already been posting, you know, videos of him with the Footwork King, and people are running around with those. And I don't know if are you guys familiar with the Footwork King?
No.
Are you familiar with him?
Is that Rex Ryan?
So he's like this guy that like trains people, and he posts these videos on Twitter and Instagram, and he got me during trying to think of a delay.
Huh?
It was a delayed reaction to the Rex Ryan. So he just posts all these videos of these guys he works out, and everyone has been running with the Deontay Foreman stuff because they're like, oh, look how great he looks. But he's also had like this gaggle of guys that have never done anything that like relate to real football that like look
Johnson.
Awesome, like running around these rings and like these cones and doing stuff. But they have just Josh Ferguson and some guy named Buddy Howell on their roster.
Yep.
I don't know who Buddy Howell is. I don't believe he's real at all.
He's not.
I'm curious to hear your take, Josh, because you do a lot more of the big position, you know, scouting.
Yeah.
How do you feel about these two guys they drafted at the top? These offensive linemen that are just from small schools, you know, Titus Howard is an offensive tackle from Alabama State.
Correct.
And Max Sharping is from Northern Illinois.
Correct.
I mean, these are two guys that they use high equity on that definitely were not challenged by premium competition.
The one thing
about Lamar Miller is the thing that's fun about him for fantasy is everyone's just perpetually correct both sides of the argument. I mean, he's a guy that he's at 1,100 yards in each of the last five seasons. Objectively good, you know, to have 1,100 yards. You know, only three current running backs have streaks that long just as for 3-year streaks, you know, Melvin Gordon, Todd Gurley, and Zeke. He's got a 5-year streak, but his consistent lack of touchdowns and not being used in the receiving game, he averages fewer catches per game over the last two seasons than a guy like Leonard Fournette does.
Wow.
You know, he just doesn't not getting that type of use, and doesn't score a touchdown. He scored 6 or fewer touchdowns every year in Houston.
Wow.
And you see that as it plays out last year. He had a stretch of the season last year. He had 7 games and ran for over 100 yards in 5 of them, but was a higher than RB12 in fantasy leagues just once over that stretch. You know, so you get that kind of a floor with him. So, I mean, he's just one of those guys that's an objective winner because no one drafted behind him, but we know what we're getting in bed with here. And he's perpetually been 26 years old for 8 seasons.
And, Rich, it can only help this Houston Texans seem to add offensive linemen, and who knows if they're going to be good, who knows if they're going to be bad. Sharping did face off against Brian Burns, who's the, 16th overall selection, and really shut him down as a pass protector, but that was at left tackle, I believe, and then Titus Howard flipped between right tackle and left tackle, depending on his quarterback's hand strength, hand throwedness, whatever side it means that he's left-handed or right-handed. I guess he was playing blitz is what we can go back to. That's a callback, ladies and gentlemen. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. And like you mentioned, there's no competition, and really that's what we care about. We care about volume. We care about opportunity. Pat, that means for you, you get Damien Williams. This offseason, he signed a 2-year, $5 million contract. Not a lot of money, but he certainly finished the season strong. Like previous to that, we had viewed Damien Williams as this like change of pace, you know, passing down back. And then he came in for the Chiefs after the Kareem Hunt situation and ran with power, ran with strength. And they didn't do anything to change that. So, Pat, I'm sure we should have some optimism here for Damien Williams heading into 2019.
Maybe some optimism. You know, they just re-signed Jamal Charles, Josh.
Is that for a one-day contract?
I didn't look and see if it was just for a one-day contract.
Okay.
All I saw was that they re-signed him. But Jamal Charles back. Big problems.
I will say,
Damien
I should
Williams.
Throw in, I should definitely throw in Carlos Hyde's name because he actually was signed this offseason. That was.
Yeah, I'm Damien Williams, I think the Chiefs are probably still going to ultimately view and treat as a committee back. One, probably his primary role is pass catching. Carlos Hyde, I believe, got more guaranteed money than Damien Williams, even with that contract. And Andy Reid, anytime Andy Reid drafts a running back, I take notice. It was only the 6th round, but Darwin Thompson was a very interesting flyer,
yep.
Kind of a guy who blew up the Mountain West last year. He's the kind of guy, you know, it's not unusual. I mean, it's not common, but it's not unusual, unheard of for a 6th-round, 7th-round running back to make an immediate impact as a rookie. So Damien Williams, probably who we thought he was. He was very valuable, kind of almost a season saver down the stretch for the Chiefs last year. But I would not be investing a ton of draft capital in Damien Williams right now. It's a kind of situation where maybe it could end up really paying off for you, but I feel like the odds it pays off are much lower than the odds that it, you know, kind of just proves to be kind of a, not a wasted pick, but I would tread very lightly with Damian Williams.
All right, let's now go to the wide receiver position. We know that at the end of round one, the last pick of round one, the Patriots selected wide receiver N'Keal Harry out of Arizona State. There's going to be a lot of numbers, but it's important for me to throw this at all of you out there, and thank you for listening. Hit that subscribe button. Okay, Rob Gronkowski, 72 targets last year. Josh Gordon, 68 targets last year. Chris Hogan, 55 targets last year. Cordarrelle Patterson, 28 targets last year. That was just in the regular season. All four of those players are gone. N'Keal Harry might not play the same style as any of those, but Reeves, I mean, N'Keal Harry, from a landing spot standpoint, from a self-evaluation standpoint, we hopefully believe that the Patriots do that very well. Is this a situation where we just trust in the fit and are blind to the concerns that we had heading into the draft?
Listen, man, he might not play the style of one of those receivers, but he plays the style of all those receivers.
Love
he has a little bit of his game from all those guys.
Love it.
You know, contested catch, you run after the catch. TV watchers will tell you N'Keal Harry never got open in college, but
he
somehow
didn't.
Had 330 D1 targets before turning 21 years old. You know, it's pretty ironic that a guy never got open and saw 330 targets to turn 21.
Pat Reeves just called me a TV watcher, by the way, just for reference.
Well, that's better than me being a YouTube watcher.
There we go.
In the weeks leading
TV
up
watcher
to the draft.
Josh Norris. There we go.
But I mean, I've given my take on Harry. I thought he just checks too many objective boxes not to have faith in, and then getting invested in high draft capital into a team that has a hodgepodge of vacant targets and, you know, and is an established organization. Like, I just don't want to overthink this one.
So, Pat, that means that, and I just did some inexact math here. That's always great. That means that N'Keal Harry is getting 213 targets this year.
Yeah, he's getting every one of them. And, you know, so, okay, let's slow down a little bit here. So the target situation, the landing spot, obviously you can't quibble with the landing spot. But, you know, we talked about the Patriots evaluations earlier. Bill Belichick, greatest football mind in NFL history, does not have a great track record with drafting wide receivers. You know, clearly it's all apples to oranges. It's been several years now since they busted on someone like that, I believe, Aaron Dobson. But listen, I am by no means a film maven whatsoever. I'm definitely a TV watcher. But I swear to God, when I saw N'Keal Harry, he was literally never open. And I just feel like he's great at the contested catch, and he is great after the catch. But I feel like if you were never separated, even in the Pac-12, I just don't know how that's going to work in the AFC East. And I honestly do think he's going to be a massive bust. And, you know, is Tom Brady throwing contested jump ball winners at this stage of his career? Maybe he was to Gronk. He had like a mind meld with Gronk, though, something you know, you've been working on for a decade. Maybe at least as a rookie, I could see N'Keal Harry being completely not ready for fantasy prime time. And you know, maybe I could see even N'Keal Harry being like one of those classic, like quote-unquote stunning Patriots healthy scratches. Like, N'Keal Harry not even active week one. Maybe I'm getting carried away here.
That's a bit – I think that's a bit carried away. I mean, the other receivers they brought in this offseason, Pat.
They've done high draft picks. They've lots of high draft picks in the past.
Sure, but they brought in like Maurice Harris and Bruce Ellington this offseason, I believe. So
he's
like,
going to lead the team in receiving touchdowns.
Now, hey, you guys aren't even mentioning the only name that matters, and that is Braxton Berrios, who I still own in the Dynasty
Matt
League.
Matt Lacoste.
It's going to be his year.
Okay, let's move on to another rookie wide receiver. This one's with the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs traded a fifth-round pick to move up just five spots to land Mecole Hardman, the vertical receiver. His game, in my mind, mirrors, if you want to go as positive as you can, Ted Ginn. Pat, I mean, this is a difficult situation to talk about, right? Tyreek Hill is still on the roster, but basically we all believe that Tyreek Hill will never play another snap for the Chiefs. Let's put it in this way, Pat, okay? Let's just imagine and be normal humans here and expect Tyreek Hill to never play another snap, okay? What does this mean for Mecole Hardman, and what does this also mean as a ripple effect to the Chiefs' offense? Because last year, Tyreek had 137 targets, 87 catches, almost 1,500 yards receiving, and 12 touchdowns.
I mean, this pick might as well have been called Tyreek Hill, we are replacing you. I mean, there's really no other way to read it. Like you say, he should not ever play in the NFL again. And the Chiefs kind of seem maybe unwilling to admit that to themselves. Kind of surprising they haven't released him yet. But, I mean, their actions are speaking louder than words here. Mecole Hardman, I feel like he is being drafted to play Tyreek Hill's old role. But it's going to be definitely not a sit fantasy situation I'd want to be involved in as a Mecole Hardman's rookie season. Tyreek Hill one of the most unique talents, really, in NFL history. Sure. I mean, that extra gear he had, you just – Mecole Hardman, you know, on paper is almost as fast, but on the field, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen someone as fast as Tyreek Hill on offense, at least. And I think he's being drafted clearly with that role in mind, but in fantasy – it's going to be a situation, I think, very easily set up for disappointment. And Mecole Hardman could be the kind of player who's going to take 2 or 3 years and, you know, somewhat complex offense to really maybe be kind of become a regular fantasy factor.
Rich, so the rest of the Chiefs wide receiver group, you have broken down Sammy Watkins, you have DeMarcus Robinson, you have Sammy Coates and his oven mitts for hands, you have Garrett Dieter, and you have Byron Pringle, and now you have Mecole Hardman. And obviously you have Travis Kelce, who is locked in for his role, and we talked about Damien Williams. But just looking at that roster, like, you have to project one of these wide receivers to have a big year, don't you?
I mean, we know there's going to be natural regression anyways with the, you know, when you look at quarterbacks that have thrown 50-plus touchdowns in their following season, you know, they all those guys lost, and we all were in the corner of all those guys the year after. No matter how amazing Patrick Mahomes was, we were all in the pocket of Peyton Manning, we were all in the pocket of Tom Brady, we were all in the pocket of Kurt Warner. All those guys, it's just natural evolution. Like, he was going to lose touchdowns. Losing a guy like Tyreek Hill is just a massive loss. You know, Mike Clay has tweeted about he was Patrick Mahomes with Tyreek Hill off the field last year was basically just right above like league average and, you know, yards per attempt within, you know, granted he didn't really miss a lot of time, but we're going to get to see that play out this year. I think Hardman's pretty interesting because as a prospect, you know, he'll never objectively pop on my end, a guy just from raw production, just because he just accounted for 16.5% of the Georgia receiving yards, 20% of their touchdowns. He had just had one career 100-yard game. And I was just looking back at Tyreek Hill, and Hardman's just so much objectively a better prospect than Tyreek Hill was too. It just goes to speak on how unique of a player Tyreek Hill became and how much of a unicorn he truly was. Yeah. I mean, there's no one to even compare him, you know, in the terms of distance scoring in the rushing game, the return game, and the receiving game. But Hardman does do a little bit of, like, all this to kind of be like a poor man's version. You know, Tyreek Hill coming out of West Alabama after the transfer, he never even had a 100-yard receiving game at West Alabama at all, you know, coming into the league. And then athletic profiles are similar too. So it's going to be interesting. They definitely want to do like a poor man's version of Tyreek Hill with Hardman. It just depends for the stuff, the little intricacies that I talked about, you know, as a TV watcher, you might say, you know, Tyreek Hill is one of the better players, you know, getting a release at the line of scrimmage, you know, from the slot. They run that slot fade play all the time with him. And then you get to plays. Return game production too.
And from broken Hardman. Plays so, just to get behind safeties and corners. Look, one, they could always go back and sign Kelvin Benjamin again, right? That's certainly. But two, like, those TV watchers and everyone out there that does watch television, Rich, we weren't as high as it seems like.
I do too.
Okay, maybe not football. We weren't also as high on Mecole Hardman as the NFL was, right? But it certainly seems like the Jets wanted to trade up for him in the second round as well. So just something to think about. Okay, we got two more names and we'll get out of here. We'll get out of your hair. Marquise Brown, drafted by the Baltimore Ravens after trading down from that, I believe, that 22nd spot to number 25. They picked up a 4th and a 6th round pick. Look, you can even package Miles Boykin in here, Pat. I want to throw this at you, though. From week 10 on, when Lamar Jackson was a starting quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens, he averaged 22 attempts per game and averaged 13 completions per game, and then also averaged 17 carries. So, let me paint the picture. You have Hayden Hurst, who's a first-round pick last year. You have Mark Andrews, the other tight end, who actually had production last year. Then you draft Marquise
wide receiver,
Brown,
Nick Boyle.
Right, and then you have Marquise Brown, and then you have Miles Boykin. Again, it's not a joke when we say maybe each sees 4 to 6 targets per game, and so it's going to impact this team more from a not a production element, but from a scheme standpoint, from a planning standpoint offensively.
Are you trying to say there's a difference between the offense the Ravens run and the offense Lincoln Riley runs in Oklahoma?
Perhaps.
I don't really – on film, when I'm on TV watching, it's hard to tell really a difference between these two offenses. But Marquise Brown, a prospect, super excited about it. This, you know, the speed is legitimate, and he's so – it's fluid speed. Like, he when he like changes gears, there's not really like a hitch. Like he could change a gear and like it wasn't like a hard stop. He was a really, really fun player to watch. But, you know, listen, there. Rich was talking about earlier, what about the footwork guru? I believe Lamar Jackson is working with a throwing guru this offseason. Maybe I'm hallucinating. It is that part of the offseason. But, you know, they're trying to telegraph that, hey, listen, Lamar Jackson can pass. We're going to pass more this year. Everybody chill out. It's going to be a more, slightly more traditional offense. But it's going to definitely have to be believe it when you see it. It's not like it's not like he's going to be attempting over 30 passes a game. You know, that's out the window. And Marquise Brown, it was someone I was ready to kind of like go all in on dynasty rookie drafts. And yep. You just can't do it right now. You laid it out perfectly. You just have to be realistic. And realistically, I mean, his ceiling is his literal like best case scenario ceiling is probably 6 targets a game.
Yeah.
And you know, we're not going to get that. So it's just disappointing. Someone who hopefully will eventually be like a big time NFL from a statistical standpoint, big time NFL star contributor. But it's going to be a while.
And again, from a team building standpoint, it's so, you know, if they put 8 men in the box and they can have 2 outside receivers that can win vertically. But that doesn't give us points on Sundays. Okay, Reeves, we're going to close it out here with you. The Titans wide receiver group. Last year, you had Corey Davis, 112 targets. Taywan Taylor, pause, pour one out, 56 targets. Tajay Sharp, 47 targets. Now you bring in Adam Humphries, again, on a 4-year, $36 million contract with $19 million guaranteed. You get Delanie Walker back after an early season injury, and now you draft A.J. Brown, who has outside and inside versatility. What does this mean? We know what it means for Taywan and Tajay, right? What could this even have a trickle-down effect for Corey Davis as well, not reaching 100 targets?
Yeah, I can't believe you left Seth Roberts out of the previous tangent on Marquise Brown. But I will say this, just to plug that Fantasy Fallout article I had, I linked a medical article to a Liz Frank article injury in there for NFL players about in the write-up of Marquise Brown
and hey, the when significance you say Liz Frank, of decline in performance for offensive Liz players. Frank.
Years 1 and 2 of returning from the injury. So definitely keep that in mind too with Marquise Brown. His injury really rarely gets brought up in the ilk of all this. But yeah, the Titans were a team that tried to trade for Amari Cooper. Remember last year? They were in the mix. They offered a 1 for Amari. They didn't come through the deal. So the writing was on the wall. They wanted to add a receiver. Love A.J. Brown. The similar way you guys like Marquise Brown and feel pretty icky about this landing spot where it went, you know, over Marcus Mariota's first 4 NFL seasons. The Texans have ranked 31st, 28th, 28th, and 21st in pass attempts per game. You add a guy like Adam Humphries on a significant contract who also plays the slot. And then Corey Davis also started to excel in the slot last year.
For sure.
Moving in. And so now we got slot snaps getting divvied up between 3 guys, targets getting up between 3 guys. The overall pie's not big. Corey Davis last year accounted for 26% of the Titans' targets and was the PPR wide receiver 38 in points per game. So, I mean, not very endearing when you say there's going to be a target loss involved in the upswing in Corey Davis. I feel bad for Corey Davis. I feel like he got kind of boxed in into a gap where kind of like this year, maybe N'Keal Harry will have it too, but he went much later where Corey Davis went pick 5, where there wasn't like a true blue chip guy. He was more of like a tweener wide receiver 1-2 and not a true blue chip guy. But because of the draft, he had to get taken with that kind of equity and got that thrown on him. But the Titans have shown that they want him to kind of be that kind of guy and not be just the lead one, because they, like I said, they tried to get Amari Cooper last year as well. So, I mean, Corey Davis definitely falls down. Everyone's kind of hurt by the situation. Yeah, it's hard to get excited for anyone. I want to have some faith that all this weapons suggest Marcus Mariota could be good, but we've been down this road so many times through 4 years, and Mariota hasn't even played a full season yet in the NFL. We can't even get a full season out of him. So I want to be excited because on paper, I like the pieces the Titans have. I like the pieces they have on offense. The offensive line is healthy, and it can be good healthy. But, you know, it could also be just one of these low-volume types of situations where just not enough guys get enough opportunity to elevate themselves.
Pat, that's where we're going to close it. We don't want to keep everyone saying, unless you have a closing point. Anything, Pat?
I do. Okay, Mike Tannenbaum, you know, now he's a pundit, you know, not in the front office anymore. Mike Tannenbaum, correct that Ryan Tannehill is better than Marcus Mariota? That's just my parting thought.
I bet we see 8 games from each in 2019, by the way.
No, split it right down the middle. 9 from Mariota, 7 from Tannehill.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they might be the same player, so who knows with that. Okay. Yeah,
that's sad.
This was kind of the start of our, like, true offseason. Like, I don't consider –
draft season as the real off season. So this is it. And we're going to have many more podcasts as we go along, kind of paint the big picture and then get narrow as we go. So Rich, as you can tell, has his Fantasy Fallout article up on RotoWorld. Go check that because there's players we hit on, but also plenty more. Pat has content down the pike as well. We'll be talking to him on this podcast. Pat, in the meantime, go play Day of the Tentacle. Go play Full Throttle. They're all available on iPads now, which is just like bananas to me. Grim Fandango, all those great games. Anyways, my name is Josh Norris. Thank you to you both. Thank you all out there for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time. See ya.